Welcome to DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that is thanks to our sponsors this week, Harvest, MailChimp, and New Relic. They made that possible. DLC is the show all about games played on integrated circuits, games played on tabletops. It's all about the love of gaming. I'm Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my co-host slash nemesis, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, I want to let everybody know that this rivalry between us is 100% real.
We can't even be in the same room anymore, which is why we have to do the show over Skype.
Yeah, we tried that one last week and we punched a hole in the wall. It was a mess. So happy to be here.
I'm really excited. This is obviously episode one, the very first episode of DLC. So I think we should talk a little bit about what DLC is. I actually got a tweet. I was going to pull it up, but I can't remember. I didn't remember early enough to look. But you know who you are if you're the one who tweeted me, who said, hey, oh, awesome, Jeff. You made a show and you named it after my least favorite thing about gaming, DLC. But I think we should explain a little bit about what DLC is. Of course, you know, DLC is downloadable Kanata and downloadable Christian. Right there, you got DLC. But I want DLC to be a whole lot of other things. We're excited about how it's going to involve you, the listener. If you listen to the show live, which you can do when we are recording at 5x5.tv/live, there is an IRC there. There's a whole bunch of folks hanging out in the IRC right now. I'm looking at all the fun stuff. We'll be referencing that. We'll be talking to the chat room. But also, even cooler than that, the awesome folks at 5x5 have this system where you can actually phone us in and contribute to the show using your cellular telephone. How cool is that? The number for that is on my screen here. Oh, it's 512-518-5714. If you call that, we're going to actually take calls. So I think DLC is going to be a direct live call-in, huh? Designated lobby chat. It's going to mean a lot of just different things.
I wanted to see just how much rope I could give you and how many more DLC abbreviations you could rattle
like
off.
40 on a list right here, man. Decided by listener contribution. A lot of the show, I think we're going to allow you guys to decide what a lot of the topics we're going to talk about. I want to make this as much a two-way street of gaming, love, talk as possible. It's the digital lifestyle companion for people who don't like cynicism. Huh?
Oh, man. For people
basically,
that don't
the only
know.
Reason I decided to do the show is that I could make puns and come up with different abbreviations for DLC. But
you're making this like Prairie Home Companion with your charm and your whimsy, and it's killing me.
We've already lost thousands of listeners. They're like, oh, it's just going to be Jeff making word puns and whatever. Anyway, no, there's a lot of awesome stuff to talk about this week. Even though we are in what is, you know, traditionally a lull period for gaming, for video gaming at least. So I'm excited to talk to you about the big topics. I think one of the things that we're going to make this show about is you know, a lot of the big topics that are happening, the big news stories, the story of the week. So let's get right to talking about the story of the week. And this is where I would cue the awesome bumper music for Story of the Week, but it's the first episode and we don't really
No, hold on. That's not a valid excuse. I've never known you, over the years that I've known you, I've never known you to be without a song, especially a theme song, Mr. Cannata. What would Brian Leahy say he... Uh-huh.
All right, you ready? You want me to do the Story of the Week one?
I definitely want to hear it.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
That was better than I ever could have imagined.
Oh, man. Okay, story of the week. So you got any picks for what is the most important story of the week? See, I think we're going to try to decide what was the most important thing that happened this week in the world of gaming. So hit me, Christian. What is your pick? Or what is one of your contenders?
So sales numbers for the Xbox One and the PS4 came out this week. And I think that's the biggest story of the week.
Tell me why, sir.
So Microsoft shot first and announced they had 3 million consoles sold to consumers. And it was the fastest selling Xbox in history. And that was awesome. Congratulations to them. That is a ton of Xbox Ones.
That's you included, right? You bought an Xbox. You got one for Christmas, right?
I did. A day one edition, which I think is odd that there were still, I don't know, maybe they're making more. I don't know. But yes.
Well, it would have been complicated for them to write like day 32 edition, day 17 edition.
I want that one, actually. Day 44. Oh. So that came out. And then was it a day later or 2 days later, Sony fired off their, I think it was how I first saw it was via tweet. And they had sold through 4.2 million to consumers by December 28th. And the tweet was just 4.2 million sold. 4.2 million sold. And it was like very, it was game on kind of reply.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly, it's certainly a big deal as far as the console war. But I think my takeaway from these numbers is, first of all, I think it's total BS that anybody has ever thought that these companies would artificially constrain availability on these things to create hype. And people are like, oh, wow, these companies, oh, they always want to just limit the number that you can sell at launch so that there's lines around the block. Well, obviously not. They want to sell as many of these freaking things as possible. And they would have loved those numbers last generation. They just couldn't do it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Sony still, at least in America, I've seen a few PS4s sitting on shelves, but far fewer than Xbox Ones. And I think part of that is because Sony released to more regions than Xbox, Microsoft has. But yeah, I can't imagine that either console maker wouldn't want more and more and more of these things to be out, especially when people are gobbling them up at the rate that they are.
But anytime you hear about, you know, last generation with the PS3 and the Xbox and even the Wii, and even with like when an iPhone comes out or any new big whiz bang gadget and people are lined up around the block and there's a few of them you can't get them, people are always like, oh, you know, they just artificially limit the number you can buy so that, you know, it looks like there's lines around the block. I think that's such BS. I think that it's so clear that these companies want to sell as many of these units as they can. Anyway.
Yeah, where do you think that came from? I mean, do you think there's any truth to that rumor at all? Or is it, you know, was some PR person just like, we have a bunch in shelves, but don't tell anyone?
I think it's conspiracy theory. It always makes for a better story to be like, well, I couldn't get one, and it's because they wouldn't let me. I don't know. But it's good news. These sales, I mean, I know you're framing it because you're you and you like this stuff. You're framing it as a console war type of a story. I think it's just good news all around for the industry. I think it means people were starving for new consoles. We were past due for new consoles. Everybody was really amped and ready for a new generation of home gaming. And they went out in a big way and bought these boxes.
Well, I think it's both. And I know that you're trying to be my rival and get me heated up. No, I mean, I think it is console wars in terms of, you know, Sony firing back. But I think that that plays into it being good news. I think that, and you said this before too, that competition is good for the industry. And I think having these companies that are vested and in it and have that fight and fire under them, I haven't really seen since, you know, Sega does what Nintendo don't. And while fanboys can be annoying, I think having these companies like having swag, you know, and walking around with bravado is good.
You mean because swagger?
Yes. They're firing
swag is
on all
like little bits of stuff that they give you.
No, swag is what cool people refer to swagger as.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we abbreve now. I forgot we live in the SoCal. We abbreve.
Says the man whose show is called DLC.
Oh, snap. Oh, man. Round one, Spicer. All right. So that's your pick for story of the week. I think that CES is clearly the story of the week, right? I mean, the biggest tech news in the world is happening out of Vegas right now. And we got Steam Machines. Debuting 12 models of them. And I would pick that as the story of the week, except for the fact that it kind of means nothing. I get all excited about Steam Machines and I start reading up all the specs on the Steam Machines and hands on with the Steam Machines. And oh my God, Steam Machines. And guess what? They're PCs with a different OS on them. And it turns out that Steam Machines are just a way for Valve to get us to use their OS, which is good. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that I don't think I think the Digital Storm version is a dual boot to Windows and Steam OS. So I think these are just like, oh, it's a way to make an actual regular old PC gaming rig, but load it with a new OS, which is a cool new OS. And I like the fact that Valve has made this cool new OS, but they're priced wildly all over the place. They have crazy different specs. So it's not really simplifying the PC purchasing process in any real significant way that I can see. What's your take?
Yeah, remember when everyone was so excited about Steambox? Oh my gosh, here it comes. Steam's going to get into the hardware space with Steambox. And now that you have these Steamboxes, it does feel underwhelming. And hopefully, I don't know if you stayed more abreast to the news than I have. I mean, how many Steam games are compatible on Steam OS? Do we know that?
Yeah. I don't think we know that yet, but I could be wrong. Maybe a listener will correct me. But I don't think that there's been any details in that way yet. I think it's still based on the specs of the rig you've got.
Well, but also, I mean, yeah, like, but running, I mean, are the games able to run in that Linux environment that right. SteamOS is pushing out? And I think it's great that there are more options, and I kind of understand why Valve, you know, maybe wants to do this with, you know, Gabe's comment about the threat he thought Windows 8 was creating for openness in PC gaming. But I don't know why anyone would buy a Steam box right now, or even, you know, projecting into the next year versus a gaming PC. Like, I don't see, unless Half-Life 3 comes out as a Steam box exclusive.
They are gaming PCs. And if it feels like if you get a Steam box, you're going to be able to put Windows on it should you choose, which is great. But it's. I feel like there's going to be very, very few people that invest in these things and don't use them as PCs, you know?
So are they just PCs then? You know what I mean? Like, what is the news?
That's exactly it. I think that's my whole point. It's what Valve has done is made an OS that's an alternative to Windows for gaming, and a controller. And it doesn't seem like the controller is a game changer for me. Granted, I haven't had actual hands-on with it yet, but, you know, it doesn't seem like you're not going to have to design for that controller, and it's not going to open up whole new, you know, kinds of gaming. It just seems like, yeah, these are PCs. Yeah, okay, I get it. It's a way to play games on a PC and not have to go through Windows, which may end up being a really great thing, but I don't think it's really a marketplace changer.
I agree. Yeah, not yet. What I do think is it's great, you know, quote unquote, free advertising for Valve and for Steam and getting that news. Like, they're not, you know, Valve has nothing to lose by this, I feel like. You know, they're not invested in the hardware space themselves. These other people want to make these boxes and further push the Steam brand. That's awesome. But yeah, I don't think it's anything to get really excited about. And I don't think, you know, Nintendo, Microsoft, or Sony are shaking in their boots at this development.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of other potential contenders for Story of the Week, but I think we should take our first phone call. How crazy is that? Because we got a few people on the line waiting. Now, here's the thing. Usually in this situation, there would be someone screening these calls so we know who they are, what they want to talk about. I have no idea. All I see is this person has been on hold for 11 minutes. So we're going to get to them. I'm going to bring them on and find out what they want to talk about. If they've got an idea of what the story that we should be.
Real quick, anyone that's on hold and this call or two, don't come on and be racist. We'll hang up on you. Don't come on and start swearing.
Is that a possibility?
Jeff, come on. Everything is a possibility.
You just put that into the head of so many people that would never have even occurred to them because you're...
I anti-incepted it is what I did.
You incepted it. All right. Okay. This is the first call in the first episode of DLC. I'm so excited. All right. Here we go. Are you there, caller? Hi.
Hello. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
How awesome
I made
is this?
It. Hey.
You made it. So what's your name and where are you calling from?
I am AJ Minotti, and I'm calling you from lovely Ohio, where it's like 2 degrees outside.
Yowza. It's like 72 out here, so I feel bad.
Okay.
Chargers beat you guys.
do you have a idea?
So really,
story
I was trying to listen to begin the show because I was like, I don't know what to talk about because I don't know what the show is. I guess, but I guess I'll just go off the Steambox conversation guys were having because that was kind of in my head lately too. The thing I don't get about it, and you guys kind of touched on this, is if it's just a gaming PC that has SteamOS on it, SteamOS is always going to play less games than Windows in my head. So wouldn't you really want to just immediately put Windows? Because you talked about dual booting, but is that right. Even like once you have Windows on it, why would you need to dual boot?
Right, that's a great question. I think thank you. I appreciate that. I'll let Christian take that first. Go ahead, Christian.
Yeah, that's an excellent point and one that neither Jeff or I properly articulated, because unless there is a game that requires SteamOS, something like Dota 2, you know, like a huge game that Valve has control over, or Half-Life 3, yeah, why would you ever boot into it unless, you know, you're so sick of Windows and Windows keeps crashing? But I don't think any PC game maker will make a game that they don't try to stabilize to run well on the Windows environment. So yeah, why would you ever boot into the Steam OS? That's really funny.
If it's more efficient, if it's less hoops to jump through, if the game works better, I guess those would all be, you know, reasons. But that's a great point. And I, as I'm reading these specs, a lot of these systems are dual boot. So it's interesting. I hope that they make a splash. I want more people to be playing PC games, but it's an odd thing. It's an odd thing. It's something we all wanted for a long time, and I don't think any of us really thought it through so well. All right. Go ahead.
I was on the idea of dual booting. So I have a Mac Pro, like the powerful, not the new awesome ones, but you know, an older awesome one. And that's what I do my PC gaming on. So I dual boot into a boot camp environment to boot Windows onto the machine. And I found that I am, you know, always a little less inclined to play PC games because otherwise I have my Mac running OS X and I'm, you know, in final like editing and whatever, and, you know, using it as my Mac. And I'm like, do I really want to shut down my Mac, wait for Windows to boot up, and then like even that little bit, I'll be like, I'll just go play PS4. And I feel right. Like, you know, if you're already running a Windows machine, it is a little bit of a, you know, annoyance to boot down and boot up into another OS. And that, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that dual boot system helps Steam.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking in the chat room here. Looks like Jay Barrett Design quoted from The Verge saying that while SteamOS won't have quite the game library that Steam on Windows does, Valve says that there are about 250 titles supporting it so far. So that kind of answers the support question. And an interesting comment from Jaff Inch, who says that Valve is one of the most pro-consumer publisher developers. Platform-specific games are anti-consumer. He can't see them artificially sealing off the market, which is an interesting point, too. They're making an alternative, but you know, all this stuff about, oh, well, if Half-Life 3 was specific, you know, exclusive to SteamOS, doesn't seem like something Valve would do. I agree with that. Here's my actual pick, I think, for story of the week.
Wait, what were those? What was that? You can't. You told your not actual one. I led with my actual one, and then you just threw out a different one. Just
yeah,
you
dude.
Know, just...
That's how I win. That's how I win. This is that I head fake, and then I Because this is the one I'm actually most excited about. And this is another CES story. Okay. And you know how crazy in love with Oculus Rift I am, right?
And Beyonce.
Well, both, yeah. That's why I did a Beyonce drop of this show, you know? Announce it next day, out, boom. Anyway, there's a new prototype for the Oculus Rift at CES right now. I wish I could be there trying it out, although I have no desire to be at CES, to be honest with you. It looks awesome. They've got a new OLED screen that reduces latency significantly, which is really the biggest hurdle for the Oculus to get over.
That's CarMax's big thing.
Right. And it's got positional tracking. So it's got the little dots on the outside so it can track your head in space. So they were talking about how the demo that I saw at E3 last year, I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but it was the HD Oculus demo that they were showing behind closed doors, which was sort of a mock-up that they had done with the Unreal 4 demo. And you walk around in the demo and you can shoot ice bolts and stuff, which was really stunning with the Oculus. But now you can also like lean your head forward and lean your head back, and it knows where you are positionally, which is super awesome. And it gives us one step closer to the holodeck that I want so badly in my house. Christian, it is the story of the week. I'm telling you, this is the year of Oculus.
No, okay. I don't disagree that this could be the year of Oculus, but that's not story of the week when they announce something and have been consistently iterating on it and improving it, and it's still not the consumer ready device. That's when it's the story of the week, when I can go to Best Buy, who am I kidding, when I can go to Amazon and order an Oculus and get it to my house and it works. These incremental updates.
Well, yeah, but
so that's why it can't be story of the week.
You want it, story of the week would have to be, it's available now, go buy it.
Yeah, when that happens, it'll be story of the week. Right now, it's just we're continuing to tinker with the thing we've been tinkering with that you want, and it's getting better. I'd hope so. Or story of the week would be Oculus Rift never worked.
That would be the saddest story of the week.
But I think it's an expected story of the week. I don't think anyone expected the sales numbers for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One to be as high as they were in just that short time in 2013. I think that's a bigger story for gaming and for tech than Oculus. You're wrong.
All right, we're gonna go to a call and see if the caller agrees or doesn't agree with you. All right, caller, are you there?
Hello.
Who is this?
It's Adam from Australia.
Adam. Oh, I met Adam when I was in Australia. Adam from Australia. PAX Australia, which was freaking awesome. I can't believe you're calling all the way from Australia. That's so cool. What's your opinion on what story of the week should be this week?
Look, I got to try the Oculus out at PAX, and I thought that it's pretty important what's happening at CES, but I still think PlayStation Now is probably the biggest story of the week for me.
PlayStation Now. Now, that's a great one we haven't even brought up yet. PlayStation Now works. And I actually thought, Christian, that you were going to bring that up because you're such a Vita fanboy. You love your Vita. And now you can play Last of Us on your Vita, your favorite game of last year, your favorite system to play it on. How is that not your story of the week, dude?
It can't be my story of the week because I spent the end of last year talking about how it would never work.
That's why it should be my story of the week, because it proves wrong.
I'm excited. I was talking to friends about this. Like I actually really like, you know, the remote play on Vita right now, but the fact that it works as well as it does makes me really frustrated that the Vita doesn't have full controller parity with the PS4 or PS3 controller. Like the back touch screen isn't a great substitute for R2, R3, you know, those buttons. And so Last of Us streaming is great, but I don't know if using back touch will be as fluid or as comfortable as playing it on a native controller. But I love, holy crap, it goes into beta in January and people at CES say it works. Awesome. Awesome.
All right, so Adam, are you going to be playing a lot of PS3 games on your Vita or on your PS4, or why are you excited about it?
Well, I've yet to get a PS4, so I'm excited from the perspective that, you know, it still works on a PS3. I'm more and more being convinced to buy a Vita, especially after Christian was talking about Tearaway on it, and it is quite a better proposition. But I did actually sell my Vita a year ago, so I don't know if I really want to take the plunge again, but I'm being swayed more and more by the day.
Very cool. All right, dude, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Go ahead. Breaking news real quick.
Breaking news. Christian Spicer with breaking news.
You can give 1 point to Jeff Cannata, perhaps, for story of the week, as Garnet Lee tweets in and says, the story of the week regarding Oculus Rift is that Carmack making games potentially gives the device its Mario, having that in-house experience. And I think that's a great point, that they have a game developer that can make games for this tech. And that's something that, you know, neither you or I talked about, but
yeah,
maybe potentially giving you a point for story of the week. Thanks a lot, Garnet. Thanks for nothing. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
I'm glad this Garnet person, not familiar, but awesome that Garnet sent that in. That is so true. Exactly what Carmack always says, which is sort of that, like, we have to eat our own dog food, where not only do we have to make the tech, we have to make a game that showcases the tech. It's not enough for us to just, you know, have this thing and go and unleash it to people and go, go crazy. They have to set the benchmark. And I think it has always done that, has always said, well, here's our new engine. Not only is it an engine that we want to see other developers run with, but look at what we can make with it. We can make Doom. We can make, you know, even Rage was that, was like, oh, this new tech that we're showing off. And I think that this is even more than just an engine. This is a whole new way to digest games. And in that sense, it's great that you have these developers who not only are skilled, but have a vested interest in showing off the best of what this piece of hardware can do. So that's freaking awesome. Okay, and it's time for sponsor. We're really glad to be able to offer you the show right now to download, to listen to live. And we're able to do that because of our sponsors, one of which is Harvest. For nearly 8 years, Harvest has been providing simple and powerful time tracking to creative shops around the world. The folks at 5x5 use Harvest, and it's convenient for them because everyone that they work with can be tracked. The time that they put in can be tracked. It's simple, and it can be used anywhere. You just open the app from your web browser, your desktop PC, or your smartphone, and you start a timer, and then you get back to work. Harvest will track every second that you and your team has been putting into your newest project, and all the tracked hours appear in a visual time report designed to help finish project on time and within budget. So you'll know which clients and projects are making money and which ones are costing you. And when all is said and done, you can send professional invoices to happy clients and get paid. Don't lose track of your billable hours in 2014. Let Harvest count the seconds while you continue to produce great work. Check out Harvest at getharvest.com, and then you can try them out for 30 days. That's awesome. I love it when you can try something for free for 30 days. Getharvest.com. Then after your trial period, we're going to hook you up with a 50% off your first month by using code 5x5. So just put the 5x5 in at checkout and you'll receive 50% off your first month. Thank you so much to Harvest for supporting 5x5 and the first episode of DLC. All right. Another topic that we didn't even hit on is a couple of new games were announced this week, including Aliens Isolation. Spicer.
The title of that means Aliens. That the title of that game means Aliens. View this game in isolation. Do not compare it.
Or actually, you know, it's important to note that it's not Aliens plural isolation. It's Aliens singular isolation. And they make a big point about that because this is the first movie kind of feeling. It's survival horror. It's not second movie, James Cameron, fun, shoot stuff, crazy Marines, action town, you know?
Well, yes. I want to be excited for this game. I feel like every time an Alien thing comes out, though, they tout how it's canon, you know, it's to the story and we're spending this time. And I know it's a different developer, and I know that Colonial Marines had its problems for its own reasons. So I'm going to try to put Jaded Christian in the closet and just say, this looks awesome and I'm super excited for it. But like Jaded Christian keeps, you know, it's like a telltale heart keeps knocking on the floor and just like, don't get too excited.
Well, this is, I mean, completely different developer making this. It's a completely different take on it. And from all reports of the demo that they showed, people think it's really cool. I mean, it's much more, you know, it's not shooty, shooty, bang, bang. It's, you know, you have to run around. You have to run around and avoid the alien. And it's much more atmospheric and scary. And there's one big giant alien. And you're not sold, huh? You're just a cynical, cynical man.
Nope. I'm excited. I just remember being excited about the trailer for the last Sega published Alien game. That's what got Colonial Marines in a lot of problems, is how it demoed and then how it played. But what I'm excited about this game is, like you said, it's tied to the first game and it's Alien, and I'm getting a Slender feel from the game. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
yeah, and that's a good thing though.
I think if they pull it off, I think it's great. I mean, Patrick Klepek is, you know, a giant bomb and a big horror fan. And he talked about, I think it was on one of their, you know, multiple hours of year end coverage about, you know, jump scares used effectively in movies and games when, and I'm paraphrasing, hopefully I'm not butchering his point, because I thought it was a great one, that, you know, you don't want too many, but they throw one at you, and then for the rest of the time, you're nervous. And I think the movie Alien, the first one, did that very well, where you're introduced to this thing, and you know it could be anywhere, but for most of the movie, you don't see it. And, you know, Slender, I think, pulls that off well as a game, and if they can capture that, where you don't want to play, but at the same time, you can't stop playing this game, I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah, a Chevelle man in the IRC says that it's Amnesia Alien Edition, which is another good reference. Amnesia is a terrifying game, and yeah, it does look like that. Did you play Amnesia, Christian?
I did not.
Or do you even remember it?
I have it sitting on in my Steam library, but I have not touched it.
Sitting in your Steam. Okay, speaking of people sitting in your Steam, we got people sitting on hold. So I want to get for another call. I'm freaking loving the calls, dude. I love, this is sort of like a dream come true. I've always wanted to do a show with calls. So we're going to go to another caller.
Hi, Jeff. It's your mom.
No, it's not my mom. Although that does sound remarkably like her. Okay, caller, are you there? Hi. I'm doing the Phil Donahue thing. That's probably an older reference than most people want to hear, but okay. Hello.
Yeah, I am here. This is Gabe from sunny, fabulous Ohio.
Hey, we got a lot of Ohioans calling. It's a big, I guess people must not be working in Ohio today.
It's cold. We have nothing to do but stay inside.
Oh, that's good. I appreciate that. Thank you for tuning in and thanks for calling. What is your, what do you got to contribute? What do you got? What's your pick for?
Well, my question is, you know, what your thoughts are as far as the pricing model should be for PlayStation Now. You know, they say that it's going to be both individual rentals and then some form of subscription service. What do you think is fair? You know, my thoughts were a free rental with a PlayStation Plus membership and maybe $25 a month of the subscription. But what do you guys think is a viable long-term model pricing wise?
It's a great question. Thank you very much. Christian, what do you think?
So, and what I think is great, what you said at the end there was, you know, it's almost two questions. What should the price be, or what do we want the price to be, and what's viable for a long-term model? I feel like with things like Netflix and Spotify and other subscription services, I almost feel like it needs to be $10 to $15 a month for consumers not to balk at it. Or even things like, you know, Gamefly, you can get pretty cheap through their specials for, you know, it's renting discs by mail, but I think consumers will compare the two. And I think if they come in at $25, $30 a month on top of PS Plus, I think people will balk at that price. Whether or not $10 a month is sustainable for Sony, I don't know. It seems like a great value. But in this internet age, people have a hard time paying for things. So I think my guess is that it'll maybe be a little too high, but I think they need to hit that $10 to $15 range. Jeff, where are your...
Yeah, it's a tough proposition, right? Because they already have me paying a subscription fee now with PS Plus. So to have
value.
to have another subscription layered on top of that, I think it's a tough sell. It's like, well, why am I paying for this service when now you're offering me another service? It seems strange. I personally am much more in favor of the a la carte idea, because, you know, maybe I want to play Last of Us on my Vita, but I don't necessarily want the, you know, 300 other PS3 games right now. I don't need to be paying a subscription fee for those. So let me just rent the one, or, you know, pay to use the one. And to be able to do rentals and a subscription at the same time, or, you know, have that be an either or option is tricky as well, because then, you know, it's like, well, why do I buy the subscription if I can buy the rental, or why am I, you know, paying the rental when there's a subscription? It just seems to bifurcate the audience and can make it confusing for people in their head. So I think it's a tough situation that Sony finds themselves in, as far as like, well, where's the sweet spot?
You don't like the idea of there being choice? I mean, I think that if they offer rentals and a subscription, you know, obviously they need to hit that value proposition, but I think that's a great alternative, because it can please, it's basically like having, it seems to me, like iTunes and Netflix as one service, right? Like, you can, it'd be as if I am a Netflix subscriber for whatever it is, $10 a month, but, or if I didn't want to pay that, I could go in and rent an episode or a movie, and all from one service, versus now it's like, oh, well, I want to watch, you know, 21 Jump Street or whatever. I'll go rent that from iTunes and not pay a subscription. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you make a compelling argument that way. And it does sound like a fun use case of like, well, I just feel like that gives people more incentive not to pay for the subscription, which is what Sony want. They want people to pay for the subscription, right? They don't want the a la carte model. So I find that to be unlikely a scenario. For me, I don't see myself paying the subscription fee, no matter what. Like, I'm so forward thinking. I know I'm in that cult of the new when it comes to video games, that I think it's not going to be, well, I want to play all these old PS3 games that I have sitting in my house next to my disconnected PS3. Like, if I really want to play them, I can plug in my PS3. Yes, I can't play them on my Vita, which would be kind of cool, but I'm really much more interested in playing the sweet new Vita game on my Vita, you know? So I would love to see what other people think. What's the chat room think about that? I like that they're calling it the PS++. Yeah. Is this something that you would pay for, Christian?
If the price is right, I'm definitely interested, because what I like about a service like this is that you can just go and dabble. Oh, Parappa the Rapper, great game. Haven't played it in years. And I can just go play it for 20 minutes and then get out and not feel bad. It's not like, oh, I need to finish it because I bought the game. Or if you're having a party and people are over, you can just go play SingStar through the service. Or I'm trying to think of like other older, like, or your friend comes over and, oh, I used to play games. Oh, really? What did you like? I loved God of War. Well, let's fire it up right now. And I think that type of use, It's cool. And then,
but that's not something you would pay a subscription for, right? That's more of the a la carte thing.
No, I would. The pricing, it becomes the price has to be right. And I think also it could be fun if it has a big library for subscription. Like, people, you listen to people talk about, you know, their favorite games ever, and people like, oh, I really liked Ico. Oh, for whatever reason, I never played it. I don't want to go buy it per se. I'm just using Ico as an example. But you could dive in and play it and get a feel for it. And if it hooks you, keep playing it. And if not, okay, cool. You can put it away and see what's left. I really like that. You know, you can go in and get tastes and you don't feel bad. Like, oh, I got to dedicate the weekend to this game because I rented it for this weekend. Go, 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 go. You can just play for a little bit. But again, right, it depends on pricing. If that price is $30 a month, then no. But if it's 10 to 15, sign me up.
Yeah, I guess that's the, I mean, even 15 sounds like so much. It looks like the chat room is saying $10. Some people are saying $5 is even their upper end. I think $5 a month is pretty unrealistic. There's no way that they're going to offer any kind of large selection of games that low. I think it's going to be 10 or 15. I don't know. Just for me, it's not a compelling value proposition, but that's just my particular taste. I'm always sort of forward thinking as far as like, oh, I want to play the next new cool thing that's coming out rather than looking back. But I see what you're saying about like, oh, it'd be fun to try this one thing. But if I'm in that, I mean, I don't even do that with NES games now, which are available on, you know, the Wii and the Wii U. It's like, yeah, I could, but there's, I got so many things that I want to play that are, that just came out. I guess I'm not, typical.
Are you a Spotify or Pandora subscriber?
Yeah, but I don't think that's the same thing. You know, I think you're much more likely to want to hear a song, a particular song, than you are to want to play a particular game. You know, it's such a more, it's a different kind of experience to be like, oh, I want to hear that song now, or I'm in the mood for, you know, the Smiths right now. So let's put on the Smiths. You know, I don't find myself going, I'm in the mood for old school GoldenEye. You know, I mean, I might say that once in a while, but it's not like music.
I don't disagree, but I guess it's the value thing. Like for me, when I signed up for Spotify, it was, okay, this is $10 a month. Am I buying an album a month right now? Probably not, but it gets close. But with Spotify now, you know, I can go and listen to the new Britney Spears album. I would never have bought it, but you know, whatever. It's quote unquote free, right? I've already paid for it. Let's dive in and listen to that. Let's listen to.
You're just trying to get an excuse to listen to the new Britney Spears album. That's this whole argument comes down to that, right?
It's not very good. It's one of the worst big pop albums to come out this year. But yes, it is kind of an excuse to do that. But while also
Leave
listening
Britney
to
Britney alone, Christian, you're not.
I think that's copyrighted by that guy.
You just have to pay for that? Damn it.
No, I'm just kidding. But I think that's where it could be cool, is going in. And I think people might be interested in those old games and those old experiences. But I understand that, you know, you hate it, and that you hate, you know, old movies. You know, you hate yourself after you turned 30. I understand. I know.
What do you mean? You look at haven't turned 30 yet. Shush. Okay. All right. We're going to take one more call, and then see where we'll kind of close the book on the story of the week discussion. Let's find out. Oh, 27 minutes on hold. That is a person who's committed. Hello, caller. Are you there? Hi.
Hi, this is Russ. I'm calling from Georgia.
Hey, Russ.
Hey, how are you doing? At the risk of disappointing Christian, I will be continuing the streak of callers who are not using racist comments or anything like that.
So far, we're 3-3.
But I think we lost you. Next caller. I'm just kidding.
I want to welcome you guys to the 5x5 network and community. It's a great... I've been listening to 5x5 for a couple of years now, and I think you guys have found a great home here.
Awesome.
Two quick points. One, on the Steam Box, I think one little wrinkle that you guys miss in terms of a value proposition for the Steam Box, it's about bridging PC gaming into the living room. And, I mean, that is really what they're pushing. And the idea of being able to connect your PC, which I know you can do now, to a TV, but to do it in a way that has console-like simplicity, I think that's what Gabe and the boys are shooting for, and hopefully that's one of the things we'll get from a Steam Box.
I think that's a great point.
The second,
go ahead. No, after you, sir.
No, that was really it about the Steam Box. But the other thing is, I just wanted to talk about, you know, just quickly, like, what are you guys playing that's fun for you right now? I got lucky enough to get into the Hearthstone beta about, 2 months ago or so. And, man, I am having such fun with that game. I can't wait for it to go live, you know, so that everybody can play. But I wonder, what are you guys doing now just for fun games? Not necessarily the most brilliant game that you're playing, but just what's just plain fun? Thanks.
All right, cool. Thank you so much for that call. We'll take those in order as you ask them. The first thing about the Steam Box is, I think that's a great point. However, looking at what was announced at CES, I find it hard to see those boxes as being that use case. Like I think certainly some people will plug them into their TVs, but they're so all across the board, and there's such wide ranging price points that it doesn't seem like, oh, here's this computer to plug into your television. Am I wrong about that, Christian? I just don't see it.
I agree. I think that's part of the hoped for potential with these boxes. But I think, I mean, you still need a keyboard. You know, not every game is big picture enabled. The new Valve controller is cool and supposed to be helpful for RTSs and, you know, MOBAs and stuff like that. But some games will still require mouse and keyboard. Some of these boxes are huge.
Right.
I think they'll still need updates. I don't think it were there. I don't think, I guess it goes back to your point, Jeff, is I don't see how these are different than just gaming PCs right now. I think that's a hope that Valve will get to, or that users want, is a TV-friendly PC experience. But unfortunately, I don't think these Steam boxes are there, have bridged that gap. I agree with you.
As far as the games that I'm playing right now, I actually started rehearsals on a play. So I am in literally 6 days a week, over 8 hours a day, in the trenches of that, which is, it's really going to be a fun show. But I haven't been gaming as much in the last couple of weeks as I have. I'm really excited to play the new game on Xbox One, the downloadable Max and the Curse of the Brotherhood, or whatever it's called. Can't even remember the name right now. What about you, Christian? What are you playing?
So, wow, Lego Marvel is so good.
Oh my God, I'm dying to play that. I've just heard such amazing stuff about it.
It's up there with the best Marvel game ever made. Like, it has some of, you know, the Lego games are a little long in the tooth perhaps, but wow, what, talk about a fun game. It's really, really freaking charming, and I'm having a blast playing that. And then I've been really, you know, I'm bad at it, but I've really been enjoying, as much maligned as, you know, the problems are with the connectivity and stuff, but NBA 2K14, I'm just playing a simple season and not messing around with, you know, my character, my GM, any of that stuff. And the core game of basketball there is so much fun. It's frustrating how much the other stuff being messed up hurts it. But just the core on the court basketball, I'm having a blast with that game still. And between that and Marvel, that's where I've been spending most of my time. Very different types of experiences, but both are just really fun, and really been enjoying both of them.
I definitely agree with the caller about Hearthstone. It is crack. Is
it the same game
crack.
As Hearthstone, or are those two different games?
Those are different ones. The Hearthstone was an older. It's not worth. Hearthstone, however, fantastic. I'm actually terrified of when it goes to the mass audience because people are already pulling off such insane decks and schooling me. I was in the beta pretty early, and I was able to hold my own, you know, relatively consistently for a long time. And the matchmaking is good. I'm still able to win a few matches here and there, but there's some people where you'll start a game and you're like, holy crap, how did they think of that? That's insane. So I think the skill level is going to just skyrocket when everyone is playing it. And it is an amazing game. It is so well designed. I am frightened about how much money I'm going to spend on that game as well. But great call. Thank you. It's time to talk about our second sponsor, MailChimp. MailChimp is awesome. MailChimp.com gets you easy email newsletters. That means you can design email newsletters, share them on social networks, integrate them with services you already use, and then track your results. If you need to communicate to a large number of people, a small number of people, if you need to disseminate information, there is nothing better than MailChimp. It's like your own personal publishing platform. You can customize your sign-up form to match your brand, and you can share it on your website and integrate it into your Facebook page. That's Facebook page. You can even collect signups from an iPad or a laptop, and importing an easy it's easy to import an existing list into MailChimp, and no matter how it's formatted. And you can personalize everything your subscribers see, including signup forms and confirmation emails. Guess what? There's never been a better time to try MailChimp. With 2,000 subscribers, you can send 12,000 emails per month forever. That's a lot of emails per month. Just visit MailChimp.com/5x5 to learn more. Awesome. Thank you to MailChimp for that. Okay, we've done topic of the week. I want to give you a what if here. This is something I've been thinking about for a long time, and I'm so excited to hear some callers and some chatters and some audience weigh in on this. And actually, Spicer, I don't think I've ever spoken to you about this.
Okay.
You ready for this? This is a what if that I've been thinking about. Half-Life 3. Okay. Obviously, we don't know what the hell it is. I remember, I don't know how many people also remember how earth-shattering the announcement of Half-Life 2 was and how it just completely changed the game. And it made me at the time, and a lot of people, I think, really think about what video games could be. And I remember being just overwhelmed by that. And I want that experience again. I want to feel like, oh my gosh, they're blowing the doors wide open about what a first-person shooter can be, what video games can be in general, and they're really pushing the whole medium forward. We saw, you know, after Half-Life 2 really introduced the idea of physics as being a real gameplay mechanic. You know, it was the gravity gun, and then every game in the world had a similar mechanic, and it really just pushed the whole medium forward. And I think, well, what's the company that can do that? What's the game that can do that? And of course, Half-Life 3 is the one you go to first. It's like, that's the company that can really do that. And then I was thinking, well, what is the kind of thing that could really just shock people and push the medium forward and make something unprecedented? Maybe not unprecedented, but at least novel and powerful. And I thought of this, and I want to hear your opinion and all of you out there in Radio Land. What if Gordon Freeman, at the beginning of Half-Life 3, is fighting the aliens, doing all the stuff that he does, and early on in the game, he gets to a point where he goes, no more. I'm not using guns anymore. He's Batman.
Is there a story reason? Or is this
I'm not writing the story here. I'm just saying, from a gameplay perspective, what if Valve goes, no more shooting?
Got it. Okay.
In our game. And I was thinking, like, what if a big time franchise like Half-Life, or even I thought, what if Uncharted did that? And Uncharted went, Nathan Drake goes, no more killing. I will not kill anyone else. I've done too much killing in my life. Like, he turns over a new leaf, and there's a new way of dealing with enemies, or, you know, it's more of a chase game, it's more whatever it is. But what if a major franchise and a major sort of iconic hero decided not to kill anymore? Is that compelling? Is that interesting? Or is it just like Jeff being his hippie self and not wanting to shoot people in the face so much?
Well, I mean, you've rooted for this type of game for a while, but isn't that Batman Arkham, all three Batman Arkham games?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I get. I mean, obviously Batman has that philosophy, but I'm thinking of it, I think it's more shocking if it's a game that used to be a shooter turning into, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think it could be more powerful if it's like a guy who used to shoot deciding not to, and a sequel to a game that used to be a shooter not being a shooter anymore.
So I think, so to some extent, then I think you are writing story, right? Because I think it'd be interesting, but I almost feel like they would need to cover that character arc in the scope of a game, like Drake using the Uncharted story. Because mm-hmm. as much as I love Half-Life, I played episode 2 when it came out, and my story knowledge on Half-Life has slipped over the years, unfortunately. But, you know, if Drake's running around shooting and then he accidentally, you know, shoots someone he cares about, whoever the femme fatale is in Uncharted 4 or whatever, right? Or something like that happens and he looks at the gun, he has his Dark Knight Rises, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt moment, and is like, no, ugh, and throws the gun, and then he, you know, only fisticuffs. But I think, you know, I think this has come up when, you know, you or other people have talked about this before, is you need to really then commit to it, because you can't then have him just use trank darts or stun guns.
Yeah.
And then is it any different if he's just punching everybody out and throwing them off cliffs or Batmaning them?
Yeah, I think it would have to be. I mean, I think that my fantasy version of this, and fun, people are already making fun of me in the IRC, Half-Life 3 is a debate sim, says Jaff Inch. Buddhist Monk the Game, says
Half-Life 3, colon, Phoenix Wright. I like it.
Objection! Says a non-speaking Gordon Freeman. But I think that it would have to be significantly different than Batman. It would have to not, it's not just a beat 'em up. It's more like, I think that the challenge and the reason that I go to like the one of these top tier developers in a top tier franchise is the way to make a sea change, the way to make something truly disruptive is to introduce a whole new style of sort of gameplay mechanics of like, well, what if Gordon, because he's a freaking engineer scientist dude, has to outsmart the bad guys instead of killing them? What if, you know, what if we have to use physics to get around them, or I don't know. I'm not a game designer here. I mean, I guess that's the flaw of my argument, is that I don't have the complete solution. I just think it would be so powerful if they really did flip the switch and flip the script and go, this character who has been using machine guns and all this stuff, which is really not the fun part of Half-Life for me, that character just doesn't do it anymore and figures out a new way to deal with the environment. I don't know.
I like what you're saying, but I do think the problem is what you just mentioned, that you haven't, because what you're doing then is, you know, you say you're not writing story and you haven't figured out how to develop it, but I think what you are is you're writing story to change the type of game that Half-Life is. Like, people in the chat are saying, you know, it becomes a debate sim, but it doesn't necessarily become a debate sim. It becomes Portal, and, you know, he gets trapped in, or it becomes a stealth game, and then you're stuck, you know, trying to sneak around people, use physics to sneak around people. And I think that's great, but I don't think that will be a sea change the way Half-Life was, because, and part of the problem is that neither one of us are developers or creative enough to think of something new, right? What I'm doing is saying, oh, well, then Half-Life becomes X, this other type of game that already exists. And what made Half-Life so great is that no one had done a gravity gun and used physics in that way, and it became a sea change. I think if they could come up with a new type of gameplay that doesn't happen to use guns or kill people, then yeah, you'd have it. But I don't think putting Gordon in a different type of game that just no longer kills people will have that impact.
Well, I think that what I'm trying to propose is that an established game character and a big, powerful franchise says our next design ethos is create the next game where you don't have to kill anybody, but it's still fun, it's still action-packed, it's still exciting. I just want to see that. All right, let's see if there's a caller that has an opinion about this. This guy's been on hold for 43 minutes. Hello, am I insane? Is this a dumb idea? Do you want to kill people in video games only? What's up?
I do like the nickname Hippie Jeff. I think that's going to suit you very well.
What is your name?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm Jeff. I'm calling from Rochester, New York, where it is frigid.
Yes, indeed. I have no shirt on right now because it's so warm in my apartment, but that's probably too much information.
Oh, lucky you. So I kind of have the short answer to your question is, if they do it well, right? You know, if they can create a game where Gordon doesn't want to shoot or anything, and if they create it well, then yeah, I think that they can probably do that. But then it kind of falls into the problem of just becoming a Portal game or a stealth game or something like that.
Is it something that you think is a worthwhile goal, or do you think it really kind of doesn't matter?
Personally, I don't really think it kind of matters, because then it just kind of turns into this philosophical thing that Valve is trying to say, that, you know, games don't need to be shooters anymore. You know, we should be above this now.
Mm-hmm. Fair point. It's interesting. Some of the people in the chat room have hit the nail on the head. I think that somebody said that Jeff just wants Half-Life 3 to be combat resolved through Hearthstone battles, which, you know, I'd still buy that game. Or Telltale does Half-Life 3, says somebody. Did you have another comment that you wanted to make, Jeff?
kind of off topic here. I was curious, what are you guys planning on your new consoles? So it doesn't really sound like there's an awful too much coming out until about like the March timeframe. So I'm curious what, you know, are they collecting dust yet? Or are you guys still playing with them?
That's a great question. I mean, we talk about all these crazy sales figures. It's people buying consoles to play what? To play what? Christian, you just bought a...
Yeah, there's seven and a half million people out there with a console underneath their TV.
Yeah. Christian, you just got an Xbox One. What you said you're playing Marvel on it? Marvel Lego?
So, full disclosure, I have not opened my Xbox One yet.
You haven't opened it?
And it's because, I think I told you this, IRL, Amanda and I are moving, and I didn't want to, like, soon, very, like, I got it, and then we're moving in, you know, in a week or two, and I didn't want to set it up and all that stuff just to put it away a week later. So that's why it's still hanging out in its box. But I am playing NBA 2K14. So I'm
You know how you know you're old? It's when you get a friggin' new console and you're like, yeah, I can wait. I can wait on that. That's how you know you're no longer a child inside.
But you also know you're old when you already have the other new console because you can afford both. You know, you know what I mean? Like, being old's not all bad. If I didn't have a PS4 already set up, yeah, I would have set up that Xbox One. But I'm very happy, and I'm blessed slash cursed in the sense that, yeah, there's a gaming drought, so to speak, but it's not affecting me because I'm not blowing through games as quickly as other people are able to. Like, I'm still working through. I'm still really enjoying Need for Speed. I'm close to the end, but not quite done with Killzone. And then I'm playing Marvel and NBA all on the PS4, and I'm having a great time with them. And then I'm still playing GT6 on my PS3. So there's plenty of games that I'm playing.
Wow, you're such a Sony fanboy that you bought an Xbox One just to make it sit in the corner in a timeout.
I bought a day one edition, so someone that really wanted it couldn't have it.
Just sit there and watch me play PS4, Xbox One. You like voice command it. Xbox, watch me play PS4.
What are you playing, Mr. I only play new games for a day, and I talk about how much I love them, and then I never talk about them again, even though I hate them and never finish them.
That's not true, nor is that accurate.
That's a better nickname than Hippie Jeff. It's a little long, but I think it's pretty
good. It's a lot of hyphens. I play a lot of stuff. Like I said, I'm very busy, very extremely busy right now with other life stuff, but I love Knack, and I still haven't finished it because it's a pretty long game, and I play it. I think that game is a really wonderful game to play in short stretches because you know, you can get a little frustrated, and I can play like one chapter and then not play it for a week, and then play another chapter, or, you know, play it for a day or two, and then, you know, it's super fun. The combat system is fantastic. Yes, there's a lot of things that you can improve with Knack, but I think it's my favorite launch game. It's really, really fun. So that's kind of the game that is highest on my list to finish right now. And like I said, I want to play that Max Curse of the Brotherhood. I think that's what it's called. Because I've heard Dan Trachtenberg was telling me how much he enjoyed that.
And Don't Starve just is now free for PS Plus.
Oh, PS Plus. PS4. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, how about you, Jeff? Are you playing any? Do you have the consoles?
Yeah, so I do not. I'm primarily a PC gamer. I think I'm going to skip this generation. But primarily what I'm playing on PC is, I really think PC is where it's going to be at this time around. You know,
do you want a Steam machine? Are you
about
excited
Oculus,
about that?
But where's Oculus going to be? It's going to be on PC.
That's true. Very good point. Thank you so much for that call.
Thanks.
It's interesting. I think he's right about the Oculus, certainly. I don't think I could sit out this generation. That's pretty intense. But, PC gaming is certainly fun. My heart is with PC gaming, and certainly most of the big games that are coming out are also coming out on PC and look just as beautiful. And now we've got all these Steam machines. Interesting. Let's take another call. 37 minutes on hold. My gosh, these guys are awesome. Caller, are you there? Hi. First time, long time? I clicked it, but he didn't come in. Click it again.
Is there a 415 number that you see, Jeff?
Yes. Is that you?
It's not me, but is the next number after that a 7?
Yeah. No. Hello? Yes.
Well, let's get to that person. I think we want to talk to that person after this wonderful person.
Okay, this wonderful person. Hello there, sir.
Hi.
Hi, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, hi. This is Joe from Miami.
Hey, Joe. What's
Welcome
up?
To Miami.
Hey, yeah, really. Weather's lovely here. I feel bad for everyone else. I was calling because I was really interested in the PlayStation Now conversation from earlier and how that would actually affect remote play through Vita through PS4 if that Gaikai streaming would be used to enhance that over to achieve the dream of like over another network, if that was talked about.
I don't think I need to follow. Do you understand what you're talking about, Christian?
I think so. So you're asking if, you know, the PlayStation Now and Gaikai, that technology being integrated through PlayStation Now, if that'll make, you know, remote play, i.e. playing PS4 games on your Vita, easier or less latent, having less latency if you're, say, in California from Miami versus right now, where if you're on
right.
a different Wi-Fi network, it can be slow.
Yeah, because I was under the impression that when the streaming stuff would go, when they started talking about it, that was sort of their original goal, or that was part of the original plan, and I don't know if that was necessarily referenced in what they've been talking about, or if they're talking about just the kind of backwards compatibility functionality right now, and what that means for when everyone was talking about the PS4 really bolstering the Vita in terms of its possibilities.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we have any proof of that yet. I don't think that it looks like all of the reports, at least from CES, are talking about how it is, it's working just, you know, streaming locally there onto the Vita. I think that remains to be seen, and it could certainly be a cool feature if it works. Again, it's not something that's super compelling to me personally, but I can see why people would dig it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking the question whether that would be good or bad for the Vita in terms of would it just become a portable player or would it still remain its own kind of have its own identity, and especially now with now streaming as backwards compatibility, I wonder further if they're just kind of going to position the Vita as a sort of another device within the ecosystem rather than its own console.
I mean, right. I love my Vita. But I think if they can position it as anything, it's great for the Vita, right? I don't think it's PlayStation Now. Go ahead, Jeff.
I just feel like, especially having come off the awesome experience of playing Tearaway, I'm just so much more interested in original titles for the Vita. I'm much more interested in using that system to its strengths and creating compelling play experiences that take advantage of what it offers rather than anything that is you just using it as an extender. Using it as an extender is cool. It's certainly cool. It's just not really what gets, you know, blows my skirt up personally. But
sure.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you.
Oops, sorry.
More consoles into hands, I think then you'll have more tearaways. Whereas right now, unfortunately, you know, people aren't buying the console, so people aren't going to develop. What did Tearaway sell? 14,000 copies or something, you know. Didn't sell well. So I think anything they can do to position it as something that people feel like they need to or want to own will only help the system.
Yeah, but you and I agree on the greatness of Tearaway and how much fun and how charming and just anybody that hasn't played that owns a Vita, shame on you, because this is a reason to own a Vita. It's really, really good. Okay, this mystery caller that you wanted to get to, Christian.
See who it is.
Are you there, mystery caller? Mystery caller?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, mystery caller. Are you there?
Hello? I'm here. Hello?
Hello? Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hello. This is John Davison. I'm calling.
John Davison? Johnny English himself, the man, the myth, the legend. What is up? Thank you for calling, man. This is awesome. Uh-oh. Are we hearing him? Just like my dreams, when John Davison calls in my dreams, it's only merely a dream. Man, I hope that we can get him back, because that was awesome.
It's just a tease, just a British accent tease, and then he's gone.
He's like, that was actually just a soundbite recording that I got when I ran by John. I said, just John, say who you are. And he goes, I'm John Ravison. And then I just plugged it into our show.
I hope we can get him back.
I hope so too. He's still technically on the line. I think he's just having cell phone issues. John. Oh, should we? Are you there?
I'm here. Oh. How you doing?
Yay! We're doing awesome. Okay, what's up, man?
I'm good. Congratulations on the new show.
Thank you very much. I very much appreciate it. I hope that we can have you on as a actual guest at some point. But we will not be able to use your cell phone. I'm inviting you, but not your gadgets. So I hope you understand that. Oh, we completely lost him. Well, that was fun. We got a congratulations from John Davison, who, if callers are not familiar, is a luminary of the video game podcasting world, an executive, an editor of numerous, every freaking gaming magazine in history he has helped create and put out. And he's the coolest, one of the coolest guys I've ever met. So thank you, John, for calling however briefly, and we hope that you are able to upgrade your Sony Ericsson phone to a actual usable phone. See, I thank him, I compliment him, and then I diss his tech. It's really, really sad, but I really appreciate him calling. All right, we got one more call on... Oh, he's back. Okay, we're going to try it again. This is episode one. Oh, no, he's gone!
What are you doing?
Episode one, a few hiccups, folks, but fear not. Let's go to this one. Are you there, caller who is not John and hopefully has a better cell phone connection?
I am on a cell phone. This is Nick from Boston. Hopefully it works.
Oh, you sound crystal clear, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Excellent. I wanted to kind of throw a wrench in and pivot to tabletop, because it sounded like that was maybe a legal topic on the show.
Yes.
And ask about tabletop ports of game, you know, the computer tablet version of tabletop game.
Right.
And how those kind of fit in. Have you played any? Which ones are your favorites? How does it compare to playing the real game with your friends in person versus
I love this question. Yes, we will get to my board game of the week. That's going to be coming up very soon, so stay tuned for that. But yeah, this is a great question. I'm of two minds about ports. I first of all love that they exist and love that they may work as a gateway for people to try board game experiences, and you get the wonderful systems and rule sets that make board games so fun and compelling for me. And some of them, as you said, are spectacularly well done. I will reference just a few. Agricola, which is, I think, probably my favorite game of all time, has a beautiful iOS version that looks wonderful on the iPad. As is Le Havre, which is from the same designer and is beautifully well done. Ascension is great. In fact, I think Ascension plays better on the iPad than it does on the table, which is rare.
And for the next 14 years, Jeff Cannata continued to list board games that played well on iPad.
It's true. I could talk a long time. But you know,
also, I'm just kidding.
He called. You know, I did pay him to call.
No, but, I'm just busting your chops.
Yeah, man, my goal with this show, one of my goals, is to bend you to my will and make you excited about board games, Christian. And then
I've always enjoyed playing the games that we've played together. It's just, you know, I'm a loner and a loser and have a hard time getting together with a group of friends to play games, which is why I want your list to continue.
That's
because
why this is so great, man. This is
exactly.
why being able to. So this is the mixed feelings that I have is that they Puerto Rico is another great one. I mean, the list goes on and on, and almost every big game at this point is being turned into an iOS version, which is really cool, and it lets you play these games for a lot cheaper than you know, some of these games are very expensive. So it lets you play, by yourself, single player experience of these board games. But the bad news is, for me, what is the most fun thing about playing board games isn't present. And that is sitting across from people and having that real life, real world experience and being able to manipulate the physicality of the board and the cardboard bits and the little wooden pegs and all that stuff, that visceral, that tactile experience is what I love so much about it. And all of that, of course, is missing. So they are a pale substitute, as far as I'm concerned, a shadow of what is I'm waxing philosophic, aren't I? Waxing poetic. They're a shadow of a mirror image draped in a cloth of time. They're cool and they work in a pinch and they let you experience these games. And it's fun to also kind of take some of these big ass board games on trial runs or try interesting strategies that, you know, you've been thinking about trying. So they're cool, but I'm never going to, you know, having the option to do one or the other, I'm never going to pick the digital version over the real version, over the physical version. How about you? Are you playing anything?
Definitely, just the digital version is the temporary fix.
Yeah, exactly. It's the temporary fix. It's the I'm sitting on the bus, or I'm waiting in line at CVS or whatever it is, and I've got a few minutes, and I can put in a few turns on this game, and very few of those games have online play, simply because it just doesn't really work very well to do it that way. So a lot of them are just pass and play, and the pass and play works pretty well. But A Ticket to Ride is another very, very well done app version of a great board game, great introductory board game, by the way. So the pass and play, like if you're on a camping trip and you want to play and you don't want to pull out all the bits and pieces that are going to get, you know, fall through the picnic table crack or, you know, get in your ketchup from your burger or whatever it is. Although you don't really want ketchup on your iOS device either, but, it's a great alternative. I've been talking way too long about this.
So
stuff.
Cares. I feel like this stuff almost runs into the same problem that, you know, when people started putting shooters on iOS devices, like just because, or phones and tablets, just because we can do it doesn't mean you should. And while I think it's great that some of these games might have great tablet versions, I'd almost rather see them develop something like, you know, Hearthstone as a, like you talked about, a card game meant to be a computer game and using those the pros of that system, of the technology to its advantage, and then utilize tabletop games for the things that it does well that you can't do on other systems. Just like I don't want to play, you know, Call of Duty on my iPhone. Don't try to pigeonhole something into a device that doesn't make it as pure of an experience. And I think we're in this world right now where people are trying to get the thing everywhere. But I wonder, to what extent does it hurt your brand if, and I'm just using, I'll just make up a name, if I'm playing board game X on my phone with friends,
it's,
and it's
very
not,
creative, very creative making up of name as well. Well done. Thanks for letting us know that you made that up so that we wouldn't get confused and like start searching for board game X to find out if we could buy it. And I really appreciate that. And it's well done.
And Christian shoots himself in the face. And thus ends the first episode. That would happen if I cared what Jeff thought about me. What was my point? Oh, so anyway, I think that's the issue that I have with these things is, you know, it's always, you hear, there's always an asterisk at the end of it. It's like, oh yeah, Ticket to Ride is good on iOS for an iOS version of it. And I'd rather have them make take the fun of Ticket to Ride, whatever that core element is, and make a ground up tablet version encapsulating that fun. That is where I think the potential is missed.
It's kind of what they do. I mean, the game is, I mean, some of them have you like physically, you know, taking a card and moving bits around, but some of them some of them really do reinvent it and kind of adapt it to the digital space and add animation and add things that aren't possible. So, and you know, it's interesting bringing this back to pure digital games. It's a lot like the difference between what you're saying. It's a lot like the difference between the Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers app versus Hearthstone, where I think the true success of Hearthstone is that they made a video game and they weren't encumbered by the heritage and the way that the tabletop game works with Magic the Gathering. Magic the Gathering, you know, they're trying to take one kind of experience and translate it onto another device. Whereas Hearthstone is, we get to make this pure video game experience and we can do all these things that aren't possible in the real space because we don't have to be true to it. And both have their joys. I love the Duels of the Planeswalkers and I love Magic the Gathering, but because they can do these things, Hearthstone has certain advantages on the computer that just make it better. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, that's an awesome call. Thank you very much. Did you have anything else you wanted to? Are you playing? Are you a board gamer? What are you playing?
I have the physical copies of Carcassonne in the app, Ticket to Ride in the app. Lately, it's mostly been Star Trek Catan and Ticket to Ride.
Two great games. I have another great. Thank you for that call. I appreciate it very much. Another great game that I will tell you about in a second, right after we hear from our third and final sponsor, New Relic. New Relic is a real-time application monitoring, easy for me to say, real-time application monitoring system that gives you the best insight to monitor and improve the performance of your applications. This is super cool. It's the only dashboard you need to keep an eye on application health and availability. So it's a diagnostic for your computer. It's got real user monitoring, server utilization, code level diagnostics, and more. You get direct visibility into your Ruby, PHP, Java, .NET, Python, Node.js apps, and New Relic is a better way to monitor and boost performance for your entire web app environment. Complete visibility anytime you want it. With over 75,000 actively connected accounts and more than 2.2 billion metrics, that's with a B, folks, they capture 202 billion metrics captured daily across 2 million applications. That's insane. That's a ton of data. It's not hard to see why New Relic is the best. So head over to newrelic.com to learn more and sign up for a free account. There's no credit card required, no commitment, and let New Relic help you make more reliable web and mobile applications. Super awesome. We thank New Relic for sponsoring the very first episode of DLC. So I'll tell you real quick, my board game of the week, Christian, I know you're excited about this one. It's called Gauntlet of Fools. I played it for the first time last week with my gaming group, and it was my D&D group, and we needed a filler game. Filler games are sort of smaller, bite-sized games that you can pull out when you're waiting for somebody to arrive, which I always love to have a few of those in the arsenal because, you want to be able to fill that time and not sit around and go, oh, well, we need the fourth guy and he's, waiting. He's in traffic. So Gauntlet of Fools is by the same guy who made Dominion, which is really one of the greatest games of all time, invented an entire genre of games, totally awesome. And this is a really cool concept. So basically, the game is played in two rounds. You figure out which character you're going to be. So it's these fantasy tropes, it's the wizard, it's the monk, it's the barbarian, it's that stuff. And so you throw down a card, however many people are playing, that many cards come out of those guys. And then each of them gets a weapon that determines how many dice you'll roll when they attack, right? So there's all these dudes to choose from. So you go, well, I want to take the barbarian with the spear because the barbarian card came down and the spear card came down because he's the most powerful. So you take him, and then the guy to your left goes, well, I want the barbarian with the spear and I don't want to take the wizard with the battle axe. I want to, or any of the other available guys, I want to take the barbarian with the spear. So in order for me to steal that guy from you and take him as my dude, I'm going to boast and say, I can take the barbarian with the spear and I can fight with one hand tied behind my back. So you take the one hand tied behind my back card and you stick it on your dude, and now he has a penalty to attacks, but he still might be way more powerful than any other dude out on the board available. So somebody else goes, well, I don't want anybody else either. I still want that barbarian with the spear. So I'll take the barbarian with the spear with one hand tied behind his back, and he'll be hopping on one foot. So you take the hopping on one foot card and you stick it. So you keep making your guy have more difficulty fighting until somebody else.
Monty Python.
Right. It's ridiculous.
Just a flesh wound.
Yes, exactly. It's silly and irreverent. And at a certain point, that guy gets so reduced in power that he's no longer the one everybody wants, or, you know, other people want different guys because they have different powers. Anyway, everybody gets their guy, and then you start phase two, which is the real meat of the game, where you start flipping over the encounter deck, and you kind of have fights, and you do, you know, encounter traps and stuff, and everybody fights, and to the point where until everybody dies. And once everybody dies, whoever has the most gold when they're dead is the winner. So it's this constant, you know, trying to see like, well, is that guy going to survive long enough? Is it worth me getting that dude and making him have a penalty? Am I going to survive longer than everybody else? And it is just really fun. It plays really fast. And the best thing about it is that when you get into that encounter phase, everybody battles the monster, but not in order. You all battle them at the same exact time. So you're not sitting around waiting for Christian to take his turn. You just, everybody goes, everybody rolls dice. The game moves really quickly. And you play this entire fantasy story in like 15 minutes. Really fun. We had a really good time with it. I think everybody walked away going, that was really great. And it's a perfect filler. I don't think it's even that expensive. It's called Gauntlet of Fools. It's by Donald X. Vaccarino, who's the guy who did Dominion. It's from Indie Cards and Games, or Boards and Cards. I can never remember that. Indie Boards and Cards. So anyway, that's a good pick. My goal with DLC is to give you guys a fun board game every week. Maybe illuminate some of the board game industry for people that might not have much familiarity with it, get people interested. We'll talk about all kinds of different stuff. Christian, you want to throw in one last topic for the show? You got anything else you want to hit this week? Anything you've been playing? Anything?
We've touched on most of what I've been playing, and we don't have to. I'll throw this out, and if you're not intrigued by it, we don't have to dive into it. Maybe we can just let it percolate, and listeners can think about it, and we can get back to it.
Yeah,
with the sales numbers coming out for, you know, the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, the comments have come up like, "Oh snap! You know, it looks like they've outsold the Wii U already." And while that is interesting, that leads to talk about, you know, Nintendo leaving the hardware space, which reminded me of the GameCube era when that was the talk then too. Like, oh, the GameCube's really underperforming. You know, at that point, Nintendo hadn't had the Wii, right? It was before the Wii. So they were on kind of a run of the N64, slightly underperforming. Now the GameCube underperforming. And that, I feel like, got the buzz starting about, will Nintendo leave the hardware space? And that buzz is certainly back now, despite the mountain of cash that Nintendo has. And so the question is, you know, what would the industry look like now if Nintendo had gone third party or handheld only after the GameCube? Because I think it's important to look at that scenario.
If there had been no Wii?
Right, to get the best, to extrapolate out possibly what the future console space might be like if they were to abandon hardware now. Because while Nintendo can be frustrating as a gamer and a fan, they have continued to innovate so much over the years, from the first analog controller, the Rumble Pack, you know, the Wiimote. Even while it wasn't a success, building the tablet screen into the Wii U controller. And so, how different, Jeff, do you think gaming would be today if, you know, Ashton Kutcher stepped on the wrong butterfly in the butterfly effect and the Wii was never released?
Wow, that is heavy. That is heavy. I think dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, just that's off the top of my head, first impression of what that would be. Well, certainly we would have not gone down the road of motion control, there would have been no motion control detour in this generation, which is interesting. I feel like I just did a piece on Rev 3 Games where they were talking about, they asked me to contribute to one of their year-end specials and talk about the last generation. And the thing I brought up, it was really fun. You can check out that video over at Rev 3 Games. One of the things I brought up was the fact that I felt like, as fun as Waggle and motion control has been in certain instances, I really feel like it was a detour. It was a road that took us away from, the real meat of what I love about video gaming for a long time. It was a time where Microsoft and Sony were trying to jump into that somehow and figure it out and jump on that bandwagon, and everybody was playing Me Too. And it really, I think I would venture to guess that we wouldn't even had the Kinect had there been no Wii, because I don't think Microsoft would have put so many resources into that development. So that's all really interesting. I don't even think that's what you're talking about. What you're talking about is sort of where would Nintendo be? What would be?
It's both. I mean, I think one feeds the other. Like, what would the Xbox One be with no Kinect? Would there be a Kinect, or would it just be voice control somehow with a mic built into the controller? Because that seems to be what, you know, Microsoft's focusing on Xbox One. And yeah, what would state of Nintendo be? Because we've certainly lost other, you know, console makers in the past, right? I mean, 3DO, Panasonic. The 3DO is no longer around. Atari Jaguar is no longer around. Bigger, of course, is Sega is no longer around. And, you know, were there huge ripples of those things that affected gaming? And I would argue that none of them would affect gaming as big as if Nintendo were to leave the hardware space, because of the way that they innovate and progress, and the way that they, you know, I remember at Sony's press conference many E3s ago when they showed off the... it wasn't even a DualShock 3. What was it called before they put Rumble back in?
Six axis.
And right. They were like, and look what we can, you know, they've just totally half-assed copied a Nintendo motion control, but they tried to be like, and we did this. I think it's interesting. And, you know, while I have certainly had my problems with the Wii U, and I've certainly aired my grievances with the console and with Nintendo, you know, I don't think them failing and leaving the hardware space is good for the industry. And I think that this doesn't contradict with what I've said before about, you don't want to root for everyone to succeed, because the market does, you know, if something is a bad idea, you want it to fail so that something better can come along. But I guess I would apply that to this situation by saying, yeah, I would like the Wii U to fail so that Nintendo can bring something better along and not just totally go away, because, you know, they're a pillar, and it's interesting. I think it's interesting.
In the IRC right now, Philippe is asking if we think Super Mario Galaxy would have existed without the Wii, because, you know, would that have, I mean, Super Mario Galaxy, I think one of the great games of last generation, would developing on a system that didn't have that control mechanic have pushed that team into that kind of space, pun absolutely intended. You know what I mean? Would we have lost innovation with Nintendo being forced to play in other people's playgrounds, you know, without having those, you know, the new control mechanics?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love Galaxy. I think Galaxy 2 is one of the best games ever. You know, only overshadowed by the fact that it was the second and not quite as revolutionary, because we had already seen Galaxy 1, but it refined everything that Galaxy 1 did. You know, neither game relied on the Wiimote much, if at all. But I think where the Wii helped that game, those games come into existence, was just the install base. And Nintendo was able to put in, you know, the Nintendo time and Nintendo polish to make that game come
Nintendo
out.
Time!
Exactly. Yeah. And come out. And so, you know, I don't know if we would have seen those games without the Wii being the success that it is. And I'm certainly glad that we did. Yeah. Anyway,
it's an interesting idea, and maybe we should talk about it more next week as well, because I love doing these sort of what ifs. You know, I was always a fan of the Marvel What If comic book. You know, and
what if Punisher killed Spider-Man?
Exactly. Just over and over, those wonderful ideas, and I love playing What If, even if it seems like nobody gives a shit about my Half-Life 3 idea, which certainly seems to be the case. I know. Half-Life 3 is going to be awesome if it comes out, you know, in my lifetime.
Can I just say that the first swear word of the episode came from Jeff Cannata?
Hey, that was unexpected. Who had that in the pool? Nobody.
Almost like people picking the 49ers to win the Super Bowl.
Ho! Don't even start. Don't even start. Spicer, I appreciate you rocking this first episode. I'm excited about this journey that you and I are starting together.
It's a great game. You. Everyone should play it. Thank you. No, seriously, thanks for having me. This has been so much fun. And thanks to my daughter, you can hear in the background. Thanks to all the callers and people in the chat and, you know, 5x5. And I want to thank my mom and my wife.
You know, you're going to be here next week again. This isn't the end of you. You're in for the long haul, bro.
No, this is the end of every show. I have a long sign off.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yes, thank you to everybody. This show is going to be possible because people participate, and I cannot thank the callers enough. A special thanks to John Davison for calling in. That was a really awesome, cool vote of confidence. And I even see like awesome people like Indy Jeff Mattis is in the chat room, and Anthony Carboni is in the chat. Like, I'm fans of these people and they're hanging out. So we are going to have more guests on, like really real guests also coming up.
You mean like really on, like we won't have phone. You're not saying
yeah,
that
not phones.
Of our
yeah,
maybe we weren't real guests, but we'll have them really connected.
Yes. Right. We'll have John Davison on an actual Skype chat, hopefully if he is willing and others. And there's going to be a lot of fun over the course of the show. I'm really, really excited. I think this is going to be a unique, interesting way of talking about video games where you guys can contribute. So I hope you guys dig it. And I hope anybody that's listening to this later considers hanging out live. But we will hopefully strive to make the show fun when you listen later as well. Programming note, next week, saying any incorrect information, but I think we'll be recording on Mondays going forward. So today was a Wednesday, but I think we're going to do Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific time going forward. Why don't you write down the phone number so you have it, people? 512-518-5714 is the telephone number to call us anytime that we are recording live. We'd love to hear from you. What am I forgetting? This is awesome. Thanks.
Where can people find you online if they wanted to talk to you when you're not doing this show?
Well, first of all, the show is DLC. I hope people send us ideas for what DLC should stand for, because I would love to hear that. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata. That's with two N's and one T. You can follow my exploits on jeffcannata.com. This show is available at 5x5.tv/DLC. It is also available on iTunes. It would be the best thing ever if you would go and subscribe as soon as you can to that show, and maybe even drop us a little review or comment on iTunes. It would be a huge boon for our show as we are just starting out. And Christian, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And you can also head over to my website, christianspicer.com. And seriously, yeah, if you listened live, thank you so much. And you enjoyed it. Tell your friend. One of the best things you can do to support
a podcast. Maybe they have more than one. Maybe they have more than one friends.
I'm not asking for much, just one. But one of the best things you can do to support a podcast, especially a new podcast, is tell people about it in word of mouth. You know, it really means a lot. And, you know, we really, really appreciate your support. And I look forward to saying stupid stuff as we go forward and people yelling at. I love the immediacy of people just being like, you're an idiot. Yeah. It's great.
All right. That does it for episode one. Until next week, think about what you put out in the world and make the world a better place. ¶¶